Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Foy
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
This is a special You Live episode. Of course, Bob's in here. Rehab Bob on Twitter, we can follow him. Let's see, you want to check us out at the Facebook Live feed, which is Dr. Drew's Facebook / what?
There he is.
Facebook / yes. How do they get to that, everybody? Andy Dick is our special guest.
Hi, how are
hey,
you?
Buddy.
Special.
And Andy's a master of social media, so maybe you can help us sort of notify everybody.
Yeah.
There you are. So they just go to my Facebook page and the live feed comes up automatically? Yes, Andy?
Yeah. Yes.
And then you're going to Periscope, or you are Periscoping?
I'm Periscoping now. But Susan wants me to go back and forth to all of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Instagram Live, everything. Yeah. And by the way, MySpace is back.
Tell me about that.
Are you sure, Andy? You're not just drinking too much.
I'm not drinking, Sonny. No, it's back. And okay.
Like for bands and everything?
I guess for everybody. And it's back. And I tried to sign on with my name, and they say, well, that name's being used, and it is by me from back then, like 15-20 years ago.
Wow.
But I don't remember anything. They're sending it to the wrong email, even.
Oh, yeah, I have a Yahoo email back then.
I have a little crispy in my headphone.
Me too. I'm getting a little crazy.
Is that bad?
As long as it's not going out to the world.
I'm going to turn this off then. We'll see what happens.
And a reminder, this is sponsored by Hydrolite at Alliant University. Find it all on doctor.com. And we do appreciate the support of our sponsors and your support of them. Click on the banners at doctor.com and get acquainted with these products. Tell a friend. Tell a friend about our Facebook live feed right now. And tell a friend about the products as well. You hear me screaming about Hydrolite all the time. So, Bob, this was a special episode that we gathered here on a Sunday afternoon because we felt we needed to.
It's ridiculous what's going on.
Yes. So I'll let you sort of take it for a second here. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, months ago, acquaintance of mine, you know, apparently killed himself, and I didn't really want to talk about it.
We're talking about Chris?
Yeah. And he had his kids, and I just felt like, I don't know, this is an anomaly.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks ago, I was walking down the Champs-Élysées, however you say it.
As is your custom.
As is my custom. And I got this text. And I immediately texted back to the friend. And he said, no, it's true. And he wrote the word suicide.
Yes.
And I just started crying. No. And we're walking down with our kids down, you know, right by the Arc de Triomphe.
Mm-hmm.
And I started crying. And I guess Elvis had never seen me cry. Because he was hugging on to me going, what's wrong? And I was just like, oh my God. And that affected our trip, that this guy that I love and care about killed himself.
Yeah. Another guy you love and care about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I knew Chester much better than Chris.
Oh,
I was
no
his
kidding.
Acquaintance to Chris. I knew Chester. I'm the one that, you know, he was just man of the year in 2013.
Chris.
Chester.
Chris was too, not that
long
ago.
In 2007.
Oh my God.
So,
really?
So it was just, and what I found over the time, we went to Lollapalooza, talked to all the musicians there. That's everybody wanted to talk about it, what we thought about it. And there was this political correctness that, you know, like, oh, he was so sad or whatever. And there's this, to not really talk about the fact that you have six children and you found within your reasoning that you could leave those children on this earth.
So let's talk about how that can happen, right? You and I have seen some very impulsive suicidal patients over the years, right, who suddenly will do stuff out of the
blue.
But
isn't there – what I wanted to come here and talk with you is there's – okay, the 13 Reasons Why TV show.
Yeah.
You know, Chrissy, my wife's a counselor. She can't watch it after 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. It's she's joining that coalition like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The romanticization of suicide in our culture.
Yeah.
Started with Kurt Cobain, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, suicide's been a romantic solution for a long time in Western culture, even in Eastern cultures, too. Think about it. So I agree with you. The unfortunate reality of that kind of romanticization is there's some almost a magical thinking about it. Like, it'll you know, I'll be around to see the reaction, or they'll miss me. Almost an adolescent way of thinking. Now, that's one aspect. But the other aspect, again, the kind of sudden impulsive suicide is usually from intense pain, like really profound pain.
What kind of pain? Physical pain?
No, emotional pain usually.
What was he depressed about? I did not know him. He had some trauma.
He had sexual abuse.
Here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. So everybody kind of becomes an armchair therapist, psychologist in times like this. Everybody gives their two cents worth. Fact is, I'm a sexual abuse survivor, and I think about killing myself. But there are people to reach out to, and there are things to believe in. That tomorrow could be a better day. You could gain more insight. And what makes people not do that is being special. That is my conclusion about Kurt, about this. It's special, special, special doctors that kiss your ass, special medicines that you shouldn't tell anybody
That's
about, special treatment at drug treatment centers, special, special, special.
Yeah, special care, unless it's for very specific reasons, right? I mean, like, we've exhausted everything else. We need to try something special. But special because it's a special person, that tends to go badly.
And then there's the accidental ones, DJAM. There's all these special treatments in Beverly Hills in particular amongst that crew. Yeah. And that's why I wanted Andy here, speaking of special. Talk about the guy who's had the most special treatment in the world.
And I deserve it. What, Dr. Drew?
I just worry about you.
Oh, don't. Don't.
Don't.
I don't do heroin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you get going, it freaks the hell out of me.
It can, it's scary. Yeah, I'm doing well now.
That's good.
Yeah. You didn't know what you were going to have today, did you?
No, I knew. I know you. You always reconstitute.
Well,
I bounce back.
You do, and that's kind of part of the problem, because you go so deep that it's like, oh, are we going to make it this time?
I've said it many, many times, and I'm sticking to my guns. I was saying it at your rehab to you in the kitchen. I don't know if you remember. I said, I really want to get to a point where I can drink like a gentleman.
Yeah. Oh, well, you said it on this show
last time. I've seen him say it everywhere.
No, but if you remember.
I'll get it. I will get this thing.
If you remember,
I told you
were planning your next relapse, and then you went, yeah, I really want to learn how to drink like a gentleman. I was like, okay, well, there we go. How's that work so far?
Well, sometimes it does, you know.
Till what?
Until
it doesn't.
Until he leaves the house.
No, come on.
I would predict your last drink was yesterday.
No. It's been a couple months.
Something. I'm not doing the numbers game either. I'm really not.
All right, that's fine.
But I'm just not. But once a little time has gone by, I'll think back and I'll pinpoint the date, and I'll probably get the app again. I have to reset it again. But can I talk about Chester? Because I saw an article about, and we have a special guest sitting
special
next to
guest.
Me. We'll
it's
get to her in
accident.
A second,
yeah.
which
yeah,
is
yeah. Yeah.
the accidental surprise guest. But I heard this thing that possibly he was murdered.
Well,
this was in the news.
You hear that all the
this
time.
This was in the news, Dr. Drew.
There is a possibility with both of them that there was an accident.
Mm. What do you mean accident?
It just gets into salacious stuff.
Yeah, I didn't want to get into it.
But it is
a possibility.
The Michael Hutchinson thing.
Right, right. The Keith Carradine.
Right.
Keith Carradine
David
did that?
David Carradine did that?
Yeah.
In Thailand.
That's how he died.
The Philippines.
Yeah, that's how he died.
Philippines, something, yeah.
Really?
Yes. A lot of people die that way. It's a common thing, and it's worthy
of... You ever
of...
tried that, Andy?
No, I don't get it.
I've never been interested in that
either,
at all.
Well, it's people
We're
that...
talking about autoerotic asphyxiation.
Why, what is it? It's because
when you're an opiate addict, your arousal system is going to be permanently altered. And
well,
so
you just,
they,
when
they
you're
don't...
An, and also, part of being an opiate addict is you're just non-sexual. That's what you sign up for.
Well, but evidently...
I mean, am I the only one here?
You're the only one, yeah.
You are.
but that in order to feel satisfaction after you've been on opiates for a while, sometimes you have to do extreme things to feel satisfied.
I did do not the autoerotic, but I did asphyxiation. That was my first high. I would get on all fours. My friend told me how to do it. Get on all fours and huff and puff and pant.
Yeah.
And he'd stand behind me. I'd jump up and he'd squeeze my guts and blow all the air out, and I would pass out and fall on the floor.
Kids have died that way, too.
Oh, what?
Yes, kids have died that
Jesus
way, too.
Jesus Christ, I could have died.
How old were you?
I was 16, 17. I did it like five, maybe 20 times altogether. It was fun.
But I don't want to...
You couldn't just get some acid? Or what was wrong with you?
No, back then, I didn't... No, I didn't do that.
You just did that?
I started getting high with marijuana.
It's a kind of a common thing. Behavioral, you know, sort of maneuvers, spinning, going to the playground, spinning around, you know, that kind of
stuff.
My
daughter did that right away, and I knew right away.
Yeah.
So it's a crazy world.
By the way, I love your daughter's videos. They're fantastic.
God, she's good.
Yeah.
So, I wanted her to come today to meet you. She almost did, but she's busy.
Well, please send her my congratulations.
She's busy doing stuff.
Oh,
we're moving.
She said she was pissed at you.
Oh, yeah,
she is. She's constantly pissed at me. No, I'm not kidding. Lucas doesn't even talk to
me. So one of the things I wanted to say is, you know, I love that movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
It's right?
One of my favorites.
And it's profound.
It really is.
And people, I use it in my own life. Like, I have a responsibility to the people in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing the good that the people in my life are seeing me. And that movie always gives me faith.
What do you mean?
That if I'm ever thinking about killing myself, which I have several times, I just always think, well, you know, I don't want the attention and the sadness in them. I just know that they see me differently than I see myself. And then I reach out
to
them.
The people that care about you.
Yes. And I reach out to them. I tell them how down I am or you know, how.
Yeah. Well, now hold that thought. That's a really interesting framing of severe depression, which is they see me differently than I see myself.
And I'm going to have faith in that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Meaning you're going to live in their reality of you and not in your reality.
Well,
I also have a group of friends that you can call and say, I'm thinking about killing myself, and they don't judge you. They go, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
me too.
Me too is a very powerful.
What is it, Tuesday? Yeah.
Me too is a very powerful statement, frankly. Yeah, yeah. But there's a part of this you have to realize is that our self emerges from others. Right. So if our self needs reframing, guess where we can do that is with other people. But telling yourself that, I never really thought about that. That's a very powerful
mantra. It comes from
mantra.
The movie.
You framed it in a particular way that I think is really quite ingenious. You got to say it over and over again.
Yeah, that James.
They see me differently than I see myself. Yeah. You know, Mike Catherwood, who filled in the last couple of weeks, who I radio with all the time, I'm always telling him that too. And he's like, well, he doesn't accept it. He won't accept it. He still feels miserable and, you know, negative and stuff. And he just
does he really?
Yeah.
He seems like one of the happiest people.
He's a lot like Navarro, really, like Dave Navarro.
Really? And me. I'm depressed. I have thought of suicide. You know, maybe in the last 5 years, it's been more like, maybe I could do it. But you're right. I go to other people and I'm like, how could I ever
I have also begun to contemplate extraordinary measures for depression because people.
What do you mean by extraordinary measures?
Well, I mean, like Navarro did it. We did a thing with him where he's doing these hallucinogen treatments. You know,
which
like,
one?
Ibogaine?
No.
Well, ayahuasca?
No, it's sort of more DMT, LSD stuff, but it's guided and all this stuff, and it's with a careful.
Well, you know, he has trauma. Like
I understand,
he's Native American too. Peyote, probably.
No, but do you know his story?
No,
his mother was murdered by his stepfather, and he saw the guy leaving the house.
That's right. I did know that. Oh my,
it's crazy.
God.
It's a piece of the trauma for him, and he can't get at it. And so, you know, I was just thinking about him.
We almost dated, he and I. That would have been traumatic for him.
And me too.
He's very codependent. He could have saved you, Andy. You might be sober from a long time
or
ago.
Or we both go out together, like Romeo and Juliet.
Shocking. Yeah. Good for you on Romeo and Juliet.
I'm not Juliet.
I understand.
No.
But where was I? Yeah. Oh, but I started thinking that you see Time Magazine now, they're talking about ketamine infusions, people like you. And
what do you mean, people like me? I don't do ketamine.
Right.
I don't do ketamine.
They do these infusions.
What are you talking about?
It's a treatment.
And
some people with recalcitrant depressions are having these results.
I take that back. One time, my friend shoots up ketamine. Okay, he lives on
That's different. It's an addictive drug. I mean, make no mistake.
But let me tell you something. He does it. And then one time I was at his place and I got so drunk, he told me he shot me up with it in the butt.
Jesus. Oh, God.
I'm like, you could go to jail for that.
Yes, you could. And I don't know enough.
He shot it in my butt when I didn't even know.
Well,
just to put me out.
How did. And it just
I didn't
made
even
go to
know.
Sleep?
I didn't even know. Yeah. I woke up.
No
like
dreams?
24 hours later.
Oof.
I probably did die.
Well, that's not the idea of these things. The idea is dosing and there's experts.
Micro dosing with mushrooms, with acid.
Set and setting, it's called.
All the LSD
in
stuff.
In rehabs.
I'm convinced
in doctor's offices.
Yeah, I'm convinced all the hallucinogen stuff is actually treating PTSD. I'm convinced of it. I really think that's what that
is. So you're into it.
I am into desperate – I'm open to desperate measures if everyone's exhausted everything else. That's my point.
Like Chester and Robin Williams and everybody.
Yeah.
Pick – do something.
Well, Robin Williams –
besides kill yourself.
Robin Williams was really sick.
That was a different thing. That was – he had –
physically.
He had Lewy body dementia.
Like, so here's the thing. So with Robin Williams and Hunter S. Thompson, like it's time. It's time. Rather than suffer – Buddy Arnold was the same way. Mm. Told me I'm not going to be drooling on myself in a nursing home, right?
Yeah. Well, but Lewy body dementias, if you know anything about them, they are tormenting. You're hallucinatory and you're out of you don't know where you are. It's just an agitated state. It's terrible.
A recurring remitting, right? Then he knows.
They have some awareness sometimes. And I did an interview with Bobcat Goldthwait. Bob was his best friend. I didn't know that. And he told a story that was hair-raising about the calls he would get from Robin every hour for months, just trying to keep him connected and okay. Just horrible suffering. Just terrible.
Part of the, immediately when somebody does this, you think of their children. I always did. Yes. I remember where I was when I heard Kurt killed himself. Yes. I remember where I was when I heard about Chris a few months ago. I certainly will never forget being walking down the street, and I think it's the first time Elvis ever saw me cry. And I immediately think of those people's children.
I think of the spouses and those
six
children.
And
Chester's four, right?
But then it goes.
Chris was four. Yes.
Really,
Chris Cornell.
Yeah, but
four, so it's 10 kids.
Some are grown older. Yeah, but here's the thing. Then it goes immediately to what, I immediately thought of Dave Grohl and Chris and the band members then all the family that a band is.
Yeah.
But then it didn't ever dawn on me. There's so many fans.
Yeah.
And we have a guest here who
yes,
had won
do.
The songwriter, the Linkin Park Songwriter Award.
Oh, my gosh.
And was going to be able to go in the studio with Chester and 24 hours before he died.
Oh, my gosh.
She had won.
Her name is Lauren Dare.
Yeah.
She works here at the office.
Oh,
she works here in the studio.
I have a show here, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
She has
so
her own
show. So it's a happy
show.
Accident.
for you. So you wrote a song that they accepted as their choice.
Yeah, so about 4 months ago, I entered this contest not really thinking anything. Oh, it was sponsored by Linkin Park. I won the monthly contest. It was a monthly contest that was happening. Won the monthly contest and then got put into the grand prize and won that.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You need to record her song. Please.
And the prize was that I got to go in the studio with them. They were going to mentor me and do all the stuff. And that was announced Wednesday at 9 a.m. And they found his body Thursday at 9 a.m. So a full 24 hours and it just like...
Isn't that crazy?
Well, it's crazy. That and again, as you wild. Say, Bob, it's a reminder of how the ripple effect of somebody doing this could affect so many lives. And to your point, Bob, that's the negative part. The positive part is what we were talking about earlier is we need a name for It's a Wonderful Life syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, the syndrome of what would the world
it's
be like without
good friends,
you.
Good friends, I think.
Like, I would be devastated if this guy across the table did something.
Really?
Yes.
That makes me feel
that's why I worry about you.
Well, with people like Andy.
And I worry this can be an accident
but listen,
or something. You're going to fall.
Andy, that's what I said. That's what I said.
But it would be,
I said that. I said if I ever heard that Andy died, it wouldn't be from alcohol or drugs, would be like he fell off a cliff in Malibu
or
something.
No, he fell on Hollywood Boulevard and ran him over or something.
Or I fall, like my dishwasher's open, the tray is out with knives sticking up, and I just fall on that.
But I'm telling you, it would
something
never
real
be,
stupid.
It would never be from drugs and alcohol, and it would never be from suicide.
How about suicide? Can we
no?
Can
you
we
can
make a commitment
can,
here?
Cancel that out.
Okay.
Yeah,
you would not do that to your
you.
Kids.
No,
you would
and
not
is it, I would go through hell and high water. I just
you
want,
already
gonna,
have, man.
Yeah, and I can
but there,
do it.
But
I
there
can
is
do
a
it. I'm
but,
a man.
But there is a feeling.
You are a man.
There's a feeling that people get in suicidality where they feel like the pain just has to stop. Like imagine you're in a dark.
I will drink or do drugs or do anything besides suicide.
I will endorse that.
Yeah, thank you.
On the rare occasion
we're going out to dinner tonight.
But it's human. Here's what I think of why it's in this celebrity culture.
Why?
It's human connection, true, real human connection that matters in existence. Mm-hmm. Not how many people idolize you, not how many people you have working for you
that's
that kiss your
point.
Ass.
Great point.
And this whole industry strives to be in that position that Chester and Chris and Kurt and every other famous musician was in. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you the healthy musicians don't live in worlds like that. Because mm-hmm. my best friends don't live in a world like that.
Mm-hmm.
They live in a world where they do their own grocery shopping.
Yeah, with their family. I'm doing the dishes for the girls that live at the house every day.
And the comedian world. Yeah. Like,
and it lives in the shed.
I'll give you an
example. No, I don't anymore. And these are people. People think I do because you're
saying that. And these are people that have years. Means yes. that could be, you know, they live their own lives, mm-hmm. and that is essential in this world, because those people that work for you, like, I think
they don't really like you.
Athletes do it too, right? Mm-hmm. But then the athletes run out of money, and it ends up they're all alone, right?
I did that, what you are describing.
Okay, I'm going to take some
calls.
We
need to take a,
calls.
Calls?
Take a call first?
Calls.
I need to break,
good. I have to go to the bathroom.
Let's do a call first, because the guy calling from Estonia. I want to take his call.
Oh, Estonia is the country that has the most supermodels come out of that.
And they're all
out of that country. Yeah.
Hey,
you keep track of that?
It's true. It's a true thing. Yeah.
Supermodels.
You guys have the most
zero supermodels. Andy.
Hi.
It's Ralph.
Ralph, do I know you?
Oh, my God. Andy Dick.
Yes, Andy
Hi.
Dick.
Hi. No, we don't.
So Ralph, it's...
I know you.
We got a kind of a crappy connection here, but... But what you know about Estonia is that they're genetically and historically linked to Finland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is weird. They're right there in the middle between Lithuania and...
Which means that they are looked down upon by the Swedes, by the...
The Estonians are just dealing with the Soviets for a long time.
That was Finland is the thing that's a punchline that I grew up with.
But in Scandinavia, but not so much in the... what's next to
Lithuania? Did you know that, Andy?
No, but
all the Polish jokes that were in the 70s and 80s? Yeah. At my house, because it's Swedish... They were all Finlanders. How many Finlanders does it take to screw in a light bulb? Yeah.
I got
to
tell you something.
Hey, you know.
And if you've ever been to Helsinki, you would not say that. It's one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen.
I'm just saying. I was there a month ago, and it is one of the best places I've ever been.
Right?
Yeah.
I was shocked. It's like. Well, how? What's the American city that you would say is closest to Helsinki?
Colorado. Something.
Colorado. Well, I'm from Alaska originally, and it reminded me a lot of Alaska.
Like Anchorage.
Yep, Anchorage.
It reminded me of Colorado. San Francisco.
Yeah,
or
I can
Pittsburgh.
See that.
Yeah,
I love Pittsburgh.
But anyway, so Ralph, you says here your question. I'm going to read it because the connection is kind of crappy. I'm sober, but AA programs. AA programs in Europe don't have sponsor programs. I don't know what that means. How can
they
you have
don't,
AA without sponsors?
In Estonia, we don't.
You mean if you went to a 12-step meeting, an AA meeting, and said I need a sponsor, they wouldn't know what you were talking about?
No, they do know, but it's just not a thing here in Estonia. But I've been sober for 11 months. I go to meetings every day, and I feel like I can share everything, and I understand the program, I feel like.
But
it still kind of worries me, because I've heard you say on Loveline shows that it's really important to have a sponsor.
I will tell you why, because that's how you work the 12-step, is with another human. And the reason I'm going to take Ralph's call is to your point about the human contact.
Yeah.
Do you want to...
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's a lot made because LA is the center headquarters of all rehab in the world. But what you're looking for is some other person to enter this very deep, non-connected to any other things. It's not a family member. It's not somebody that you work with.
You're not trying to get ahead.
Yeah. It's something that's really pure.
Accepting and available.
Especially males don't have those kind of relationships, and that's what's leading to all this despair, death in America. And so you have this person in your life, and I'm that person for a few people. I have two people in my life that are that, and it's very deep, and that's what, you know, I think should be emphasized, not the somebody's above you, that kind of hierarchy. I think that Europe kind of boo-hoos. In Holland, they do too.
Interesting.
Because that person is above you.
No.
They're with you.
You just need a person to listen, empathize, and say, me too.
And you will be there for them. They will need you at some point.
At some point, or somebody else will need your service, and you will stay sober by offering that service to somebody else. Thank you, Ralph. I'm sorry we had a crappy connection. I could have talked to you all day. I love Estonia.
I want to say one thing. There. It really is a fact that the most supermodels any country have come out of Estonia.
Maybe that's why I liked it so much.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to look that up. Andy, you forgot about Google. Anybody can find out any fact in a second.
It's a real thing, though.
No, it's not.
Look it up. Look it up. I promise you.
All right. We're taking a break.
Okay.
Which means I can go to the bathroom real quick?
You can go to the bathroom, but I would remember I don't know what quite you're asking me to do because there's nothing here about what you're asking for. We're just going to go to break and remind everyone about our friends at Hydrolite. Don't forget that. Also, you can find us on Twitter at Dr. Drew and at Rehab Bob Forrest and at This Life Podcast. And do tell a friend that we're doing this Facebook Live. Be a part of it and come in, ask us questions. We'll be here for a while. Hydrolite, of course, you've heard me rave about these guys. It's a product that I actually wanted to develop myself. I conceived of this. I knew it was needed. It was already in Australia, and now it is here. It works. The feedback is unanimous. Even though it's great to use, though, when you're sick or dehydrated, you can use it every day, especially now that the weather is changing. It's hot. So whether you're exercising, or maybe you've got seasonal allergies, or you drank too much, or you got vomiting or diarrhea, whatever it might be, you can reduce fatigue and keep feeling healthy as well. Once you've started feeling dehydrated, sometimes it's a little too late. So you want to stay hydrated. And rapid rehydration, if you do get dehydrated, requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. And nothing provides it like Hydrolite. I'm telling you, it's the same as an IV fluid via your mouth, via your enteral system. It's based on established, proven science, quite simply the best rehydration product out there. It comes in great flavors. They have those fizzy tablets. Also, they have a powder and a premixed drink. Compared to other sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow directions. All right, you can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon or click through at drdrew.com. And for more information, visit Hydrolite.com. That is Hydrolite, H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydrolite.com. Welcome back.
We're back.
You Live This Life podcast. We are taking calls.
I'm just gonna lie right now. So the most supermodels in the world in a certain country come from Czechoslovakia.
Are you sure?
Look at how serious he took that.
Okay, that's Susan's thing. Look at her. That's a good example over there.
I'm telling you.
Oh.
All right.
That's
what's
for
the question?
Susan Pinsky.
We have tons and tons and tons of calls.
Good. Let's get one that we can hear.
How about Kelly Marie? You want to talk
yes,
to her?
Yes, love her.
Okay, let's talk to Kelly.
I don't know her. But,
yes, you do.
You press.
Oh, I don't know
apparently
why.
I know. Oh, great.
When I push.
Maybe there's a movie. Let me plug something while you're trying to futz with the buttons. There's a movie out that they did behind my back called Everybody Has an Andy Dick Story.
Oh, yeah.
And you're in it.
I know.
And it's winning the awards all over the place. It's at the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival. They did it without me, so it's not my movie. It's just
but
about
you,
me.
But you came to the releases and stuff.
I did. Oh, remember?
Yeah.
We wanted to do another one with you.
I'm in.
Okay,
I'm
good, good. Because okay. I wasn't there, really.
I know that.
Shut up.
Okay. Kelly Marie. But you showed up.
Hey, yeah, barely.
About okay, 2 hours late. Kelly Marie.
Hi, Kelly Marie.
Hi, everyone. How are you? Hi, Andy.
Hi, baby. Where do we know each other from?
Soba and Greg Hanley.
Oh, great. Oh, that's right. Oh, hi, Kelly. I didn't know the Marie part.
Hi.
I didn't know the Marie part. I've never heard anybody say Marie.
It's not Marie. It's Murray. Like Bill Murray.
Oh, Murray. Okay, good. Dr. Drew got it wrong. How are you?
You guys only lived together for 13 months, Andy.
Yes. No. Come on. Well, I know her, and I love her, and how are you? What's up?
I'm well. I'm just calling. You know, I just wanted to find out how you're doing. You know, we have lost PJ, and I know he was a very good friend of yours.
PJ was my roommate. PJ was my roommate for 2 years. I don't know if I, you know, this is a suicide or drug? Both. I mean, I don't think it was a suicide. I think it was an accidental overdose.
Did he get some pills from somebody?
I think it was heroin. Yeah, because I think they found, I don't want to get into details, but he was my roommate, and what you're talking about, a guy who's not in the entertainment industry, we were roommates, very different from me, but we connected on a human level for 2 years. He helped me, I helped him, it went back and forth, and then he up and died about a month ago.
Crazy.
It actually got me, you know.
Woke you up? Was he there?
It was about 2 months ago.
Was he there that night you were just so drunk at the beach house?
Where? When was that? No, I was. Oh, no, he wasn't. Okay. Oh, you heard about that. Okay, you
know, I was talking to you on the telephone,
everything.
Andy.
We
I was on the phone with
yes,
you.
We all, I, just so you know, I was too.
Look at how red you're getting red right now.
Guess
Andrew.
Who they call when Andy's in trouble?
Yeah, you.
Man.
I know, right?
And you were mean.
But Kelly, yeah, I'm not. I mean, I'm doing better, but I think about PJ every day, all day.
I'm sorry,
it's horrible. He was the sweetest guy.
It is a terrible disease. It is like he had cancer. You have to put it in the context of any other deadly illness. And he tried, and everybody gets well.
I knew something was going on. I said, you know what we should do? We should move back in together. Let's go back to Malibu. Let's move in, just get an apartment. Let's do that. And he's like, well, I found a place. There's only room for me. And I knew something was going on, and then he died.
Sad.
He started isolating, just like what you're saying, Bob.
All right, it's a plague.
This is Sean.
Good to see you, Callie. Good to
Thanks,
hear you.
Callie. We're going to go to Sean, 39. Sean, go ahead.
Sean?
It takes a second for the stalled stuff to queue up. Sean, are you there?
Are they there?
I'm going to return him to the queue if he does not. Maybe you can check on that for us. Is Lindsay back? Yeah, Lindsay, check on Sean there, see if he's still around. I came running in. We were in Orange County today, and I came running, and I don't know who's here.
You're in Laguna?
Here.
You were in Laguna?
Yeah, yes. You're
back in full effect?
Yes.
Down there?
And I met Dr. Hendricks?
Hedricks.
Hedricks. Hedricks, yeah. Hold on. Okay, here is Debbie.
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 It's
Am I doing
Shameless,
this right there?
The English one. Debbie.
17? Yeah.
Hello?
There you are, Debbie. What's going
you
on?
Live.
Nice, you live. Nice
you
clear.
Live.
You bet. You live too.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Hi, everybody.
Hi,
Andy,
Debbie.
Bob.
Hi.
Hey, hey.
Hi, Drew.
And
I'm
Debbie?
Such a huge fan of all of you guys, and your show is awesome. You probably see my question might be a little weird, but I have addiction on my family and my husband's family, mm-hmm. and we have a 16-year-old daughter. She doesn't show any signs of any of that sort of reckless. I think I've heard you guys, Drew, saying like addicts will tend to run to, say, an explosion rather than away.
Yeah, they run towards the action.
She doesn't have that.
They run towards the action. That's sort of the majority of them
that's
do.
That's true.
Yeah, if something nasty, if something terrible's happening, you guys go,
I heard a crash the other day when I was laying in bed. I jumped out of bed, put my clothes on, and ran right to it.
Perfect. Perfect.
Couldn't wait.
Well, perfect. You know, I've had my own demons, but
Debbie, I'm going to ask you to
not.
Do,
so.
I'm going to ask you to do one
Sorry?
Thing for. I'm going to ask you to do one thing for me, and I want you to no longer use that term demons. That drives me. It's a personal thing. It drives
okay.
me insane.
Oh, sorry,
demons were what possessed people's mind and soul in the 12th century. We now know that we have brain disorders.
Well,
we
I don't
have psychological.
Know. I don't know that all of us agree on that.
Okay, why not? So why not? Why not?
I don't know. 40% of the population just seems to not believe in that.
I understand, but let's not talk about it. Let's be clinically
I fight
accurate.
The good fight every day. I say the word disease. People, oh, no, it's not.
Well, so that's at least.
Andy's been with me for most of it. People. Addicts themselves don't like the disease.
I don't like calling it a disease.
Oh, my God.
I'd prefer to call
then
it
Then how
a
the
disease.
Hell do you explain your life, Andy?
Well, it's, I don't know.
Well, look what you've done, Debbie.
I sense a rabbit hole.
You really touched on something.
I am jumping down with both feet, so stand by. So how, let's
okay, Drew's going to go at Andy. Okay, go, Drew.
No, I just want to get a common language. Let's get a common language. So what are your demons? What do they look like? How would you?
Oh, okay.
No. Okay. Andy's,
yeah.
Then Debbie's.
So if you're not an addict, if you're not an alcoholic, what are you, Andy?
I'm a heavy drinker.
Well, so, what motivates that heavy drinking? That deep sadness.
I'm looking
that sadness?
At it. I'm looking at it. Yes.
Okay.
That bored.
So
when
what?
I get bored.
So why do you? So what are those mechanisms? Are they biological in nature? Are they a part of your personality?
I think
are
it's
they
chemical.
Both?
I think it's chemical.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
I just would rather you call it that than some sort of possessing.
So
know,
no, but watch Andy. Yeah. But watch Andy. He's going to say he has a chemical imbalance and that alcohol is the thing that he's lacking.
It helps.
It does help.
I'm not kidding. It helps.
I'm sure
and
it
if
helps.
I can get to a place where I can have one or two or at the most three.
I'm sorry.
Four.
Five if it is. Shut up. No, you know, I honestly, there is.
I appreciate
it's
Andy's
happen.
Honesty because
it's
you know
going
what?
To happen.
I believe about
51.
4 out of 10 people I'm treating in treatment think that, but they won't
say it. They don't
say
it. Yeah. I promise you that.
So I know when they're thinking it. Trust me. Yeah. Debbie, so your demons are?
Yes.
What are your demons?
Oh, starting very young, drinking, experimenting,
okay.
Definitely
right.
had childhood trauma. Just right. different things that created, I would call it codependent and binge drinking, this type of thing.
Okay, so you have the genetic potential for addiction, it sounds like, and you had some childhood trauma. So let's give these demons name. Andy, what would you call those demons? Can we just call them trauma and genetics, or do we have to give them a full troll face?
Well, but I think she's calling about her daughter.
Yeah, I understand. Her question was how to prevent the 16-year-old from developing the condition.
You can't
eliminate the potential, but it sounds like she's assessed her. Other alcoholic addicts know who's got it. They do immediately, right?
Uh-huh.
And so she's saying, I don't think she's got it. And she's, I think that's probably an accurate observation.
Yeah, so she's fine.
The other thing is to raise your kid as healthy as possible, and you may not have the dysregulation that drives her towards substances. Now, she'll still have the thrill seeking and all that stuff, but she may not be as prone to getting more severe complications. And it sounds like you got neither to worry about. So, okay?
Okay, good. Well, thanks, you guys.
All right, Debbie. Yeah, it's only about 50% that a child inherits the genetic potential, whether it's one or both parents with the condition. So it's about 50%. I'm having the damnedest time with this computer. There she goes. I'm beginning to think, generally speaking,
is this good news for me?
No, I'm just thinking. I've been thinking a lot about this lately, that generally speaking, the human subject, the human being, is about as who you are is accounted for on the basis of genetics to the tune of about 60%.
60?
I think about 60% of who we are is accounted for on the basis of genetics alone. And I've noticed that tends to be true. 50 to 60% is sort of the number for depressions, for substance abuse, for everything.
You know what we need to do? Bring my biological father on, and we can test your thing. Because I found him when I was 40, so I didn't grow up with him. Never knew him. He didn't know.
Are you guys similar?
And we are. This might prove his theory. We'll bring him on.
Did some of his friends say, "You know who you remind me of? Andy Dick."
You're gonna have to ask him. I wonder. He's coming in 2 weeks to visit. I just asked. Screw it. Come visit. Fine. Even though I don't really like him.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating.
It'll be fun.
Fascinating. I've forgotten our guest name. I'm sorry. It's
Lauren.
Lauren.
Yeah.
Lauren, so Lauren Dare.
Your thoughts about all this.
D-A-I-R.
I don't want to exclude her from the conversation.
No, it's really interesting.
Singer-songwriter.
I'm at the stage where all my friends are starting to get into this. And I have always been sober, I don't do anything that's never been my thing. And good, I have friends who are now going into it.
But going into what?
Heroin.
Heroin.
Not quite into heroin, but, starting to get into
pills?
Acid, coke, drinking to get blackout drunk.
Okay, but let me just say, for me, Jesus,
how old are you?
For me, the fact that she didn't say pills, I'm like, oh, thank God.
Pills are way down with young people.
Yeah, it's not as common, but they are. I mean, I do know a couple people who are getting into that. And it's so sad to me that, I had a friend who's overdosed already at 19. And I'm like, I don't remember.
Well, is it that we stopped breathing or he had a heart problem?
Overdosed and died?
No, he's alive, vomiting and for about 24 hours.
So it took too much of something.
Yeah. And it's just they're oblivious to it. They don't understand that,
Andy, help her understand that how people can't see the consequences of their using.
Well, how old are you?
I'm 19.
Oh, you're very young.
Yeah.
The consequences?
In other words, she said her friend is vomiting and sick and has to go to the hospital, but he doesn't want to make a connection between that and the using.
Yeah.
They just think it's a rite of passage and fun.
I'm just being a teenager. Are they musicians? I'm just having fun. Some who are, some who aren't.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to... Yeah. That's what I'm trying to destigmatize. You don't have to be a drunken drug addict to be a good musician.
Yeah.
There's so many great musicians that aren't addicts.
Look at Iggy Pop. My friend just saw him and said he rocked hard.
He's not now, but he was in the 70s.
No, he did a great show just last week.
I know. I'm not saying that. Stop it.
Let's get back to our call.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Back in the day, he was doing drugs.
But for you and the new generation of musicians, you can't afford to be on drugs or drinking because the music industry is so competitive, so small, so microscopic. If you get a reputation like I had in the 80s or most of my friends had, you'll never get a job.
Yeah, you'll never get a job.
Glenn, it's
very hard for me to get a job.
Let's talk to Glenn.
I'm not
kidding. It's not. You had a great job and you blew it.
People are making films about him without him.
He had a great job in Australia. He couldn't go.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my God! Now, are you doing that? That's Susan's dad's here.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Okay, I just wanted to.
Hi, how you guys doing?
How you doing?
Hello.
Hang on, Glenn. 1 second.
Oh, fantastic.
What did you want to say, Bob? You were saying something. Bob.
I wanted to say that Andy doesn't know what he's talking about. We'll get to it. Okay. What?
Glenn, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You like the shows?
I love the show, and Bob was a big help to me. I was way over medicated for a while. I read his book, DVD, really put things into perspective. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, awesome! Thanks for calling
in. I'm past my own issues now. I'm really worried about my brother. He's been on 60 years old, and he's been on prescription opioids for over 25 years for a back problem.
Man, oh man.
Does he have a life? Does he go do? Does he go do things and still has family and does stuff?
You know what the thing is? He's been a zombie for the last 15, 20 years. His existence is nil.
What does the doctor say?
But the problem now is, the problem is that it's been a problem, and we've tried to help him and tried to get help. He refuses to admit he has a problem, but now New Jersey is cracking down on opioid abuse,
which is
great. But as a byproduct of that, his doctors are no longer giving him medication.
Okay,
so is he going to the street to heroin or something?
Of course.
No, he's not. But the problem is he's been cutting his pills more and more, and he's taking less. And he's trying to wean himself off after that many years. And he told my mom just recently that he's actually having seizures now, like lower body seizures.
Yeah, those aren't that isn't seizures.
That's not a seizure. Yeah. It's weird kind of...
It's restless leg syndrome, which is what happens as you come off opiates.
He's going too fast, most likely.
Well,
but he needs to be under a doctor's care. Why doesn't he? The doctor's got him like this.
Nobody knows how to defunct opiate addicts anymore. They just aren't exposed to it even. They don't see it. They never see it. He goes to the doctor. He will be put on Suboxone for sure. For sure.
And just kept on.
That's part of the problem is
which is another problem.
He's on Medicaid and to the back of the line.
Nobody wants to do it, yeah.
Now, I'm not, and he might be a Suboxone candidate. I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, what you want to measure, Glenn, is the quality of life. You want him to have a quality of life. And so when you start to measure, I'm so opiated out, I don't have a quality of life at all. Because of my back pain, the treatment for my back pain,
by the way, the opiate is not the treatment for his back pain.
Well, it was in the beginning.
Well, it never made it better. If it made it better, we would still use it. It doesn't make it better.
So he has to switch to get a quality of life, and he's now running the show like an addict, like a typical addict, where I'm going to do it. I don't need any help, or they won't give me help. And what you got to do is just go to a doctor and say, how do I get to drug-free? Now, it's Medicaid, they're going to tell him it's going to take a year, 18 months. They're going to put him on 24.
Of Suboxone.
Yeah. And he will have a quality of life. I guarantee you, overtaking Vicodin and Percocet,
yes, I agree.
He will have a quality of life.
I totally agree.
I'm not against that. And I just keep saying, focus on quality of life.
No one ever gets off it, though. My really interesting question would be, might he be better off detoxing himself the way he's doing it?
That's what I did.
Will he make it?
I don't think he will.
Yeah, hard. It's really hard.
Not without somebody who really knows what they're doing.
I don't think he will.
No, because here's how I would approach a case like that. I would use crap loads of Mirapex to deal with that restless leg syndrome. I would give this guy Toradol to deal with the pain syndrome he's going to have.
But he has to get all those through a doctor.
Diarrhea medicine.
We'd have some Bentyl and Motrin, and we'd have some various sorts of sleeping interventions, not benzodiazepine sleeping interventions. Mm-hmm. And we would monitor this day to day.
It would take a month.
It would take a month. And we'd still be left in post acute.
I had this question months ago. Can a person do what you just said without going into a GD rehab?
Well, in my experience.
For the 22nd time.
Yeah, I understand that. And you can do that with Suboxone.
Has Andy turned against rehabs? All of a sudden there's this.
Oh, I love them, and sometimes you very much need them, but not.
Are you worrying
me.
About alcohol withdrawal, you mean?
Yeah, like I was calling people saying, can you guys give me whatever you were giving me in the rehabs? Can I just do that at my house?
There are nurses in this town that will do that.
Okay. Yeah.
But you need that kind of monitor.
I gotta lift up the right rock to find
those
salamanders.
Yeah, you need a nurse to do it. Yeah, and it would be
or
that's
a good
okay
friend will do it. A good friend will do it. Yeah. I've done it for lots of people.
So okay, if I get into that, I don't think I'm going to go there again.
Please.
For a long time. It was horrible.
But
it was
Glenn,
hard
we
for me this
get,
last
we
time.
Wanna get your, we want to get your brother to a quality of life. That's what you want. You want him to go to the park with his kids or with your kids
and
or
not
go
have,
do
not
stuff.
Not be focused on his back pain.
Yeah, not talking all that nonsense that he's probably been talking for 15 years, right?
Yeah, they stop talking about their pain when you get them off the short acting.
Okay, and another note is that more supermodels, a percentage of supermodels are born in the United States is number one. Number two is Brazil. Estonia is not on the top 10, Andy.
Are you serious? Well, I heard it from a girl.
How about Czechoslovakia? How about Czech Republic? Is that in there?
Czech
Republic.
Well, let me see.
Czech Republic, I'm sure is in there. I'm sure of it.
It's got to be in there.
Yes, I'm with you. All right, we have a great.
Czech Republic is number eight.
That's what I'm talking about. We have a really interesting call here from Jeremy, and it's going to create some conversation here. And it's on the heels, of course, we're talking about Chester and Chris's suicides. That the coroner signed them out as suicides. That's what they seem to be. So I brought up accident earlier. That's just for sake of just making people feel better. If it helps people feel better, we know in very impulsive suicidal people that when they're using. And both Chris and Chester had evidence of using, right? Are you aware of this?
Chris, alcohol.
Chris, benzodiazepine, and Chester, alcohol.
And benzodiazepine.
Ativan. Yeah.
You taking Ativan
right
now?
I don't take pills.
Okay.
No. See,
and that's when addicts do really.
Well, when you said you wanted to get the medicine to detox yourself, it's Ativan they give you.
Yeah. It's that kind of medicine.
But when I did, when I would do those in the rehabs, I would say, give me the littlest amount and I'm done in 3 days.
Yes.
And stop.
Yes,
and I would. Your place got mad. They're like, you really need it. And I'm like, no, I'm feeling good. So
well,
just
alcohol
stop.
Withdrawal is the only drug withdrawal that's commonly fatal. So we treat it very seriously.
Scary.
Yeah. So, but Jeremy has a very interesting question. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Go ahead.
Hi, Drew. I'm a friend of Andy's. I'd like to say hi to him.
Hi.
Jeremy.
Jeremy Long?
Yes.
Hi, buddy. What's going on? You don't have any kind of addiction problem.
He's got a question,
Andy.
Oh,
what's the question?
I don't have any addiction problem.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yes,
you do. No, excuse me. Wait,
you have an
Jeremy,
Andy Dick problem.
Jeremy, you do have one addiction problem. We both know what that
food.
Is.
It's Andy. It's being having a...
No, food.
Codependency?
He's a little bigger. He's a big guy. But he's doing good.
Okay.
I got him
You're
to
a
lose
little
some
guy.
Weight.
You're
I got him
guy.
To lose weight because I just call
do
him
Do you have
fat.
Anorexia, Andy, do you think?
No. No.
You some sure?
No, I don't. I love eating.
You have body image stuff, though.
I do.
Are you fat right now? Or are you good size? You're fat right now?
No, for me, I'm... I have body dysmorphia. Anyways, we're not talking about me. Jeremy, what's going on?
What's the question, brother?
Hey. Well, here's my question. Yeah, so I was on the show, and we were talking about, Chester and Chris Cornell, and even back as far as Robin Williams and their suicides. And something that I noticed when celebrities commit suicide like this, really when anybody commits suicide, but obviously more attention is drawn to it when celebrities commit suicide, is that a lot of people say, oh, this is terrible, and if you're depressed and you need help, reach out. But why is it that the depressed person needs to reach out for help? Because I've been in that state before. And when you're that depressed with a mental illness that you're on the verge of suicide, the last thing you want to do is reach out to anybody.
You're in a confined
bubble.
100% correct.
And
that's my point. My point, Jeremy, I was trying to make is a lot of these people insulate themselves with non-friend friends is all I can say. A couple of the statements by about Chester's were made by his sober companion.
I know.
Like, that's not a friend. That's not somebody you grew up with.
No.
That's not somebody you went to school with. No. That's a...
It's
you don't
a
even
hired
want to
guy.
Know what
a
I
hired
think
hand.
That
it,
is.
It's also not somebody with a medical degree that should be making assessments about what went on.
Yeah, but
here.
I mean, it was
I
just
never
talking
liked
as
any
his close
of my
friend.
Sober companions.
And I just think that it's important to remain connected to the people who knew you before. And I think celebrities that do that thrive, and celebrities that don't perish.
Yeah, on that note,
I think that's important.
I went back to my very first, I thought, when was I happy and truly having fun, naturally, no drugs, no alcohol? It was when I was about 17, 18 with my friend Dino. I went back to him and said, can we just hang out? I need to get in touch with anything. And so we started hanging out. Now we have this little podcast.
Oh, cool.
Called Skull Juice. 30-year relationship. And well, it is that.
It is that. And right. People you came up with. Like, you know, I've been around this town a long time. I've watched a lot of generations of celebrity come through here. And comedians, when they come up together, like there's a generation of comedians, they're connected.
Yeah.
Like they are bonded.
Not yet.
It talks about them. That's what it's about.
Right. Like, Barry Sobel. Barry Sobel.
Uh-huh.
People love Barry like unconditional other comedians. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like best friends. Like you got to look out for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's why I'm back in touch with Judd Apatow. I've been reaching out to Ben Stiller. All these people that I came up with, yeah.
Yeah, it's very important, whether it's fellow musicians or
and
whatever.
You,
and I don't think that people do that.
Only when you're drinking, though.
Necessarily as much.
So I want to be able to have a drink with you.
No.
Because of the TMZ-like world we live in, there's a different track now than there was in the 80s
and
90s.
And he has a pager.
No,
it sounded like a pager going off. Now what's going on here?
No.
I think I'll give you an example. I went through a really bad time in 2001. I was really seriously thinking about it, right? Two of my friends came over to my house, and I was like, okay, what are you doing? They just came in my house, came in the upstairs bedroom because I wouldn't answer the door.
Mm.
And they stayed with me for like 3 nights. Then, you know, it forced me to talk about what I was going through, right, and what I was thinking about. And
good
friends.
Did they bust the door down? How did
No, I wouldn't answer the front door, so they climbed over the fence and went upstairs in the back. Were you at that house that I had in Echo Park?
Mm-mm.
With a big meeting in the backyard?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
You were.
That was your house?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Where the meeting was.
Oh, yeah.
So they climbed over the back fence, climbed up on the roof, and went in the upstairs window and came down in my living room. I was sitting there contemplating.
Right? God.
That's love.
Yeah.
Really, it is love and connection and community. And,
but there are a couple things. Is when you are feeling that down before you get into the state, you know, where you really can't mobilize any action on your own behalf, make a commitment to somebody that you'll call them if you start feeling like it. Know the difference between suicidal ideation and suicidal intent.
I'm just giving examples. I live in a high level of depression, alcoholism crew, right?
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, a friend of mine called me and goes, what are you doing? Let's go eat. And I was like, I hadn't seen him in like 6 months. And I go, what's up? And I thought he was going through relationship problems. We sit down to eat. He goes, I'm worried about so-and-so.
Mm.
And I was like, what? And he goes, I'm worried. I got this. I don't know what it is. I just get this feeling that he could kill himself.
Good.
And we surrounded the guy, got him therapy, got him medicine. It was amazing.
Great.
It was amazing.
And so it's just a reminder that please, there are people that can help, and that these feelings pass. You can't let fleeting feelings become a permanent solution, a permanent tragedy. My refrain.
Tell me, you know how everybody's been saying these two are at peace? How the fuck do you know? Excuse me. I'm sorry I cussed. I'm sorry. How do you know they're at peace, Andy? You're not over on the other side. I'm a Catholic.
Right.
When I go to the other side, it's not going to be peaceful for Bobby.
No, it will be. It will be. You think you're going to go to hell?
I'm going to the bad spot.
No. You help so many people.
You understand that the reason Andy's saying that is because if you go, he's going too.
You're with me?
Yeah. No, we're going to heaven because we're helping people.
All right. Dan's online. Let's talk to Dan. All right. Go ahead there, Dan.
Hey, Dr. Drew. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks.
Yes, I have a question about addiction, and you kind of answered it earlier when you said the number 60%. I wanted to know what percentage do you think addiction is genetics, and what is sort of learned or maybe
third.
Well,
there's a third.
There's a guy named Mark Schuchat that is on the record. He's a long-standing researcher down at UC San Diego, and he's to me one of the best researchers in the genetics of alcoholism and addiction. And he says it's 60%. He says it this way. 60% of alcoholism is accounted for on the basis of genetics alone.
Yeah.
60% of it is purely genetics. But genes are not destiny. Genes are proclivities. But it's a necessary condition, though. You really don't really get addiction unless you have that genetic potential. Though exactly what that genetic potential is, it's kind of all over the place.
I was always trained a third. A third genetics, a third trauma. And the final ingredient is to cope with life with chemicals. Here's an interesting thing, right? So many Americans that don't have the genetic predisposition but might have trauma are coping with life with chemicals.
You're right. And that's creating dependency and all kinds of problems that are not true addiction.
I don't have a problem.
Don't you think you were in rehab? Yes. You were in rehab for 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. Don't you? You must have met a thousand people,
so many.
Right?
And a handful of them died.
And you know me.
More than a handful.
You know I'm a drug addict. Mm-hmm. You know drug addicts.
Mm-hmm. I look
those
up to
those people
you.
That, no, but those, you've known me 25 years.
Yeah.
Those people that you met in those rehabs, not all of them are drug addicts. And they're being labeled drug addicts because they have trauma and they have coping with life with chemicals.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you, when I was in there for 2 years, I had to jump in the ocean and swim 1 to 2 miles every day. I had to walk on the beach for an hour every day. And I had to go to the gym. I had to go to the sauna. I had to meditate. I had to do all. I spent about 5 to 8 hours a day in self-care, my own self-care. Hmm. And I did well, but that's not a real life. So it would be better if I could cut those 8 hours down to one glass of wine. No, are you with me now?
Oh, my God.
Are you hearing me?
We have to start wrapping up here.
I can't believe it.
Great. I know.
Hey,
I almost had them.
I met people that were in Synanon,
hear that,
Lauren? Drew? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Guess what they did?
I almost had them.
Guess what they, a huge part, what he just described is Synanon. Mm.
What does that mean?
They got up in the morning, they ran on the beach, they invented aerobics.
What is Synanon?
Synanon was the first drug program in Los Angeles.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Yeah. It was a lot about exercise.
Oh. Structure.
And then
self-care.
Exercise and nutrition.
Confrontational
therapy.
And
You know my shakes.
But community.
Mm. Oh.
Right? What you just described was Synanon.
It was that.
And you
it
stayed
was that.
Sober for 20 months.
Yeah, for 2 damn years. And it was PJ. It was the.
You didn't
it
make
was
it
Greg.
2 years. Don't stretch the truth.
Almost. a month short. Less than a month short. Come on, just round up to 2 years. Give me that.
Hang on. Let's quickly take Anna here, if you don't mind.
Okay, let's do it.
And Greg Hanley, by the way. Big shout out to him.
Anna, go ahead, honey. We got a lot of calls here. I apologize, people we're not getting to, but Anna, go ahead.
Anna.
Hello.
Hi, Anna.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm real nervous. This is the first time I've ever talked about this, and since I have been doing this. I need help. I want help, and I'm tired of getting it every day and having to use drugs to function, I feel like. And it's not opiates that I'm addicted to. Every day since I was 22 years old, I have been smoking meth, and I'm just so ready to be over it. But I'm afraid because I work full time. I don't know if I don't want my work to find out. I have insurance, and it's just such a big scary thing to try and face because I can't lose my job. I take care of my dad.
There's two things, Anna.
And I
two
just don't
things.
Even know where to start.
Two things. The meth will eventually make you psychotic. That just is a common, that's just where it goes. You'll start getting paranoid.
And I feel like I'm getting, I feel like I'm kind of getting there.
Yeah. Well, let me just talk from the point of view of the employer, right?
But hold on 1 second.
Right.
I have a feeling, though, before you do, that some of the feelings and the fear you're having is common to meth.
It's paranoia.
Particularly female meth.
I know that.
No, hold on. Particularly female meth users, in my experience, almost feel like they won't go on being. It's a kind of a soul death if they're not. They don't have their drug. It's a very strange thing I've seen in meth-using women where it's like, I'll just disintegrate without this drug. But I assure you that won't happen. Bob, go ahead.
Well, the thing is to a lot of people don't know this. You can't get fired for seeking help for your drug problem.
Not only that, they can't know about it. They can't ask you any questions.
You just go to the HR department or you go to your supervisor and you say, you know what, I need to get some help.
I need to see a doctor.
Yeah.
And that they're entitled to know, and that's it.
And then your job is to be held for you no matter what it is. And And but if you know, a lot of times if you had drugs at work or you were high or you failed a drug test or I don't know the situations, but there's lots of them.
No, there is no situation. The only situation is that I was 22 and I started. I'm 37 now, and I'm tired. I don't want to do it anymore.
You're exhausted.
I don't even end it there because I don't even know I don't even know who I am, really, because I've never been sober. I mean, I've done this every day.
That's that part, that who am I part that women often express without the drug. It's a very interesting phenomenon I've seen.
And meth is the worst.
But let's just say her first order of business is go to an NA meeting, right? Start there.
Yeah, I would check it right into
it. I know it sounds like I'm making excuses, but here's my schedule. I work 9:30 to 7:30, 5 days a week.
Right, there's 6:30 meetings all over. There's 6 a.m. meetings all over town.
Well, you can just call the local NA or AA hotline and talk to somebody and find out and tell them you're thinking about getting sober and you want some help and support and encouragement.
You're not there yet. You're in that sort of contemplative phase, you know, and you need to understand.
Well, and I've been here for like a long time. I'm just so the paranoia about asking for help. I mean, just because nobody knows, it's kind of like a double life that I live, mm-hmm. and I just want to quit.
Good.
That's good. Then,
that's a good thing.
I do. I mean, I really do. I just did.
So you need a team of allies that you're not connected with, but that you connect with. So people, or the rehab center you could call, a hotline. You can reach out. You can go to a meeting and meet somebody. You need a new team, right?
Yeah,
the good old friends that don't know you're on drugs don't need to know about this. You need to create a new support network.
Let me find out what part of the country she's calling from. And what part of the country? I know you're paranoid and don't want to tell us where, but what part of the country generally are you in?
The South.
South. Well, if you're near Atlanta, there's a place called Talbot. Program is very, very good. Atlanta's got a lot of
there's
good.
A treatment center
Florida,
on every block.
Florida's crazy. It's too much stuff going on there.
If you're in North Carolina, there's a great place in North Carolina. But, you know, why don't you reach out to me via Facebook or instant message, and I'll help steer you privately if you want.
You're all talking right. with the two yeah. best guys all in right. the country.
And is this use this name?
I'm in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Oh, that's where my mom. That's where I took my 1 year cake in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So there you go. So Anna, use the name, Anna. I don't know if that's your real name or not, but Bob will know you as such. So
just reach out to me on instant message Facebook.
Okay.
And I'll
see how nice they are.
Go to you can find more. You can follow us at This Life
You know
podcast.
What's in Oklahoma, I realize? That 200-bed Scientology rehab.
I know.
It's a good one.
Sort of.
That's funny, really.
No,
yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I'm up for anything that keeps you from killing
Me
themselves
too.
And
that's
dying.
That's my point. Bob, yeah. that's why I said sort of. It's free. I understand. And
it's free.
And because it's not medical, they can do
that's
things that
stop.
We can't do.
Not kidding.
And he only goes
advocating.
To rehabs
not,
that are free.
I'm not advocating. I'm not advocating.
Yes. How many free rehabs have you been in, Andy? Like 10?
More than that, but yeah.
Follow This Life podcast on Twitter, at Dr. Drew, at Rehab Bob. Forrest, at Rehab Bob.
I spent over.
Is your Twitter handle at Rehab Bob?
Yeah, at rehabbob.com.
I probably spent over $200,000.
You actually spent it, or you?
Spent over $200,000.
What's your Twitter handle?
Andy Dick. Everything's Andy Dick, except Snapchat, which, by the way, people do Snapchat, you know.
I know.
It's the Andy Dick on
okay.
Snapchat.
Lauren,
everything else, Andy Dick.
Where can people find you if they want to?
At Lauren Dare Owens. At Lauren Dare. Either way.
D-A-R-E?
D-A-I-R.
D-A-I-R.
I'm betting that after they grieve and when they get reconstituted,
who?
The Linkin Park guys, mm-hmm. that they're going to reach out to you and try to make that
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and I've been in contact with the team that's working on the contest, and they're taking their time and grieving as a company and as a band and figuring out how they're moving forward.
It's a crazy time for them.
Yeah, I know.
imagine?
Oh, I know those guys.
They just had
for
an
years.
Album come out.
They were leaving for tour the next week.
Some
it
of
was...
the probably the nicest band on earth. Those guys yeah. are just
and
great
back
guys.
To you, Lauren. Tell us when you're going to be performing. Probably at like the yeah. hotel okay. cafe.
Hotel.
we'll no, come and see you. I will.
I have no shows coming up, but I do have a single I'm dropping in August, and great. I will make sure that
I'll give you my
you're,
number.
You're in the know.
Maybe we can promo it here.
Is that what it's called? The hotel cafe, the one on Cuenca.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I went there one time.
Yeah.
Also, but I so you should appreciate perform you letting there. Me be a part of this.
Oh, really well, thank you for joining us. And any thank comments, you. Hit up our producer at First Lady of Love. I apologize to the callers that have been on hold. I would love to get to everybody, but we can't. All of you out there on Facebook.
Reach out on instant message.
Producer Susan, anything we should say to our Facebook crowd? Anything?
Susan Pinsky, thank Dr. You. Drew's wife.
Yes, thank you very much for being here. Also, find us a reminder to thank our friends at Hydrolite also, who... it's a great product, so I can stand it behind it.
Especially when you add vodka.
No, not vodka. But if you're recovering from vodka, no way. It might help.
If you just put that in vodka, through. You wouldn't get dehydrated.
No, you
right.
It, you turn into
you're onto something.
Paul Lind all of a sudden. go to doctor.com for details. We have a 30% discount for everyone who clicks on that banner. Yes, use the code DRDREWWHY, Dr. Drew Y, and check out. I'm sorry, Dr. Drew HY.
For Hydrate.
DRDREWHY for Hydrolite.
Hydrolite.
Dr. HY, you get 30% off, and it's essentially a rehydration product that's the same as taking an IV. All those IV things around the town, they mm-hmm. unnecessary.
Look at Andy's thinking. I get dehydrated.
Then get the hydrate and use it. And really? It's nickels compared to what you're doing. Oh, okay. And it's a
the hangover
talent.
Remedy.
Well, mine are free.
Oh, of course.
Oh, God.
All right.
Do you even pay rent?
No.
You don't pay for anything.
No. He did when he was in the shed.
No, remember, I bought... Hey, for the record, I bought the house that my ex and my kids live in, and now I live in, from my Dancing with the Stars money.
Great.
My but favorite, it's gone. The money's gone.
My
and
favorite Andy Dick statement was when he told me he moved from the was it the garage to the shed?
Something
or the,
like that.
Or the,
probably a tent.
Yeah, the tent to the shed.
Or like, from the car to the shed.
It's nice outside in the winter, in the summer.
Yeah, it can be nice.
He invented the mini house movement. You know, that whole thing.
The guy's a comedy genius, and he's living in a shed.
I like it.
I wonder if drinking has anything to do with it.
All right, you guys, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know what, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And, of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasted an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I've worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.